Hey, After Buzzers. If you didn't know, it's Kevin Undergaro, the executive producer of After Buzz, along with my partner, Maria Menounos.
Hi, everybody.
And Maria and I, as you know, have put so much time and money into the After Buzz TV product and really haven't seen a lot in return.
Nope, not yet.
But one of the ways you guys can actually help us is by tuning into our new reality show, Chasing Maria Menounos. It premieres Tuesday, March 18th, 10 o'clock, 9 p.m. Central. And features me and Maria basically bickering, fighting.
No.
No?
No, it's not just bickering and fighting. You get an inside look into my life, behind the scenes.
You'll also get a behind the scenes look at AfterBuzz.
It's really funny. It's not just bickering, and it's not fake either. So that's actually something
to think about. It's definitely not fake. It's definitely not fake. But please tune in to Chasing Maria Menounos on Oxygen, Tuesday, March 18th at 10 p.m. All of your support will help AfterBuzz because Maria certainly won't.
So rude.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. Now the largest new media platform on the web. And your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Banshee After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Banshee After Show.
Hey there, Fanshees. You know what time it is, AfterBuzz TV. Talking about Banshee Season 2, Episode 9, Homecoming. I'm Matt Lieberman. As always, Miss Oriana Leo.
Hello, everybody.
So bummed you weren't here last week.
I know.
Glad you're back.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, Monis Rose out this week, but we'll have to hold it down in his absence. What an absolute stunner of an episode. So much action, so much character development.
So much truth telling.
I know.
Wow.
I know. Some things that I wasn't sure that we were even going to get this season, we totally got, and we don't have anywhere near enough time to break it all down, so we're just going to jump right in.
Let's go.
Job goes to New York.
Yes.
To the priest. And what a really slick action sequence. This episode directed by showrunner Greg Yutanis. And he did
Hats off to you, sir.
An awesome job.
An amazing episode.
Yeah, him and Jonathan Tropper created the show, wrote the episode. Just a really, really standout installment.
I was so excited to see Job finally kick some major ass.
I know.
By himself.
Yes.
It was great to see. I was like rooting for him.
I love his fighting style.
Mm-hmm.
It's more martial arts and wrestling, like kind of MMA inspired instead of more of like a bruiser style.
Right. Less hood.
Yeah. Like,
more himself.
He did a move. It wasn't quite a Hurricane Rana, but he basically flipped around the guy's arm and then pulled it back and broke it. And he moves like an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he moves more like a thief than I feel like Sheriff Hood does.
I totally agree. But
yeah.
It surprised me. I felt like I had seen Job in action before, mm-hmm. and this made me feel like I don't know anything about the guy.
Right? He was a one-man wrecking crew.
Yep.
Until he gets captured. He gets captured, quickly undoes that situation.
That was impressive.
Really impressive use of a chair, kicking some butt, grabbing...
At knife point.
Right. Grabbing two guns, and then about to go in and kill Rabbit and the priest all in one go, but there's a ton of dudes... runs, and just when you think he's about to get out, he gets hit by a car, and I literally just went, what?
I screamed.
Yeah.
I screamed so loud because I thought, I mean, just, I don't know how they do that, special effects and stunts, but mm-hmm. he looked like he got creamed.
Yeah.
I thought he was dead.
He got dismantled.
Yeah.
It looked like. And, you know, it's funny. It's very few shows that will make me just howl in surprise. And this episode, what it conveyed very, very well were their great moments of extreme tension.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the moment that when Carrie and Sheriff Hood were in the car heading to New York, after they agreed, we kill him or we die trying. From then until the first shots were fired in the final gun sequence,
mm-hmm.
in the final shootout, I was on the front of my seat holding my breath for what felt like a solid 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was a full throttle episode.
Yeah.
I mean, from start to finish. And in every single scene, I felt that way, that where there was action heavy.
Yeah.
I was holding my breath as well.
There was not a wasted moment. So Job winds up in the hospital. And we'll get.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
To when he wakes up a bit later. Let's talk about Mr. Burton, who goes on.
So creepy.
I know.
But I have to say, Mr. Utanus, fantastic job. The use of the music.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the way that the music played, the cinematography, the slow stroll through his little assassination plan.
Well, you know, we get a lot of great music from Methodic Doubt on the show, but isolated tracks we don't often get. And I feel like this one was kind of like it was almost a view into sort of his psychology.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of like, you know, he's a man with a job to do. I love his ritual. He takes his glasses off before he kills someone,
right,
which is like something that I'd noticed but never really stuck out to me before.
And then he stuck his face in his first victim's face. Like he wanted to watch him die up close, which was very poetic and disturbing.
Yeah, very disturbing. And it's like to me, what I love about it is the ritual, because this guy, I feel like if he wasn't under someone's leash, he would just be a serial killer.
Right.
Like, he enjoys these kills and then also the feelings that he gets afterwards. You know, the mix of pride and of shame. No guilt.
No.
Because they all did something wrong to his, you know, the guy he's protecting.
Right.
But, yeah, he kills our neo-Nazi buddy from the last couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to kill our stripper friend.
Mm-hmm.
But Rebecca saves her.
Which I was hoping that would happen.
Yeah.
But I was kind of surprised. I thought she had, quote unquote, made her decision.
Right. I honestly kind of lost hope that we were going to see a turnaround for Miss Bowman. But she, not only did she help her get out of Dodge, she's got some deep conflict going on.
Major.
Yeah. Well, Alex Longshadow makes an appearance. This is skipping ahead a bit, but I want to talk about Rebecca. So, like, the line that she delivers to our stripper friend.
Yes.
Before she leaves, I believe it was like, I know what it's like to be trapped in your own life.
That's exactly what I wrote down.
Yeah. And she's been really wrestling with the fact that she can't, if she tries to leave her uncle, he'll have her killed.
It seems like she's trying to find power within the confines of this
situation.
Very limiting situation.
Exactly.
But she's starting to own it, and she's starting to realize that, okay, there are certain things that I can do. And she's becoming Kai's right-hand man, but she realizes that this woman's going to get killed because she said something.
Yeah.
And that's not what, she can't live with that.
Right. She can live with some of it, but she can't live with the murder of an innocent on her hands. Like, that's the thing. When the mayor was killed last season, at the end of last season, though she played a role in it, it was not her fault that he died.
Right.
That was Kai's fault. This would be on her hands.
100%
The same way that Jason was on her hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she can't have another death on her. I don't think that she could withstand that kind of pain.
I don't think she has the fortitude.
But I love the point that you're making about finding her power within her situation. She doesn't have the power to leave it, but she can use it to her advantage, and she can forward her own agenda without, you know, causing herself any harm.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know whether or not Alex recognizes this when he tries to sway her.
I know. I was wondering the same thing. Does he want her to tell Kai? Does he think that she's so, you know, innocent and naive that he can just manipulate her by kissing her in the meat locker?
Well, I imagine she didn't tell Kai about the kiss.
Right.
But he did want her to let him know that he was coming for him with both barrels. How do you think she felt about the kiss? I felt a little grody. Like, and I couldn't tell how she felt. She wiped it off as if it was gross. But at the same time, there was a curiosity there.
Yes.
And, you know, we've talked about her sexual curiosity and how that's kind of wrapped up in a lot of other unfulfilled feelings and a lot of repression. And part of her, I think, wants it.
I think so, too. She seemed, the way that I kind of thought she did a great job with her reactions as an actress. Mm-hmm. Lily is her name.
Yeah, Lily Simmons.
I saw in her this sort of initial maybe shock, maybe repulsion.
Yeah.
And then, again, of going, wait, I have a little bit of power here.
Yeah.
And a man wants her. I mean, she's so confused that about what sex and attention really means.
Mm-hmm.
That I think she goes through a total plethora, like rainbow of emotions in about 5 minutes or less. And at the end, she realizes, I do have a choice to make. She has many choices to make, and they're probably going to happen on a daily basis.
Yeah. And the one thing that I'm left wondering is this the moment that Rebecca Bowman realizes that her sexuality and her looks are a weapon that she can use?
I hope so.
She needs one.
Same, like I was saying, power within the confines of her very restrictive situation, but mm-hmm. she has assets.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that she stands up to Burton later,
mm-hmm.
you know, later on in the show, he lets her know flat out, I don't trust you, which we've been suspecting this whole time. And, you know, she doesn't trust him. What did she say?
I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't give a shit, which is perfect.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to give a shit because ultimately, even though Burton is the only one who's really loyal to Kai, you know, who would die for him, Rebecca wouldn't die for him. But because she's blood, she has more power than him. She knows that she can't be killed.
Right.
What was the scene where, there's a parallel here. Between Rebecca and Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the shootout later on, you know, Carrie says to the assassin, you know, I'm Rabbit's daughter. You can't kill me.
Are you sure he wants me dead?
Yeah. Are you sure he wants me dead? Do you really want to do that? And Rebecca has a similar power that I think she's just discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she will use it to far more dangerous ends.
I noticed today how often Rebecca wears white. And in much like many other characters in other shows, you know, white conveys innocence or even just making us want to side with that character because of their, you know, their inner goodness. And it made me think, I wonder if that was a foreshadowing. You know, she keeps wearing white and I'm thinking, is she pure? Is she malicious? What is she capable of? I don't really know. But the message I'm getting right now is that she's sort of growing up.
Well, here's the thing. When we first meet her, even though she's out, you know, picking up guys, she was kind of the innocent of the show. Like, even Deva's committed some small crimes. She's got her share of angst.
Mm.
You know, Rebecca didn't have that much when we first met her.
Right.
And in some ways, she's kind of the portrayal of innocence on this show. And it's how innocence gets stripped away. And, you know, her self-actualization, realizing what power she has in her situation, is going to lead her down a very dark road and bring us back to that parallel with Carrie. You know, Carrie was raised, we get a little bit of her background, raised her whole life. She didn't know at first what her father did. And then when she found out, she became very much a part of his organization.
Right.
And then this love story with our sheriff and how that ended. And having to be out on her own without anyone and making a new life for herself humanized her.
Mm-hmm.
Having these children mm-hmm. humanized her. And now she's no longer capable of the darkness that I'm worried that Rebecca is now capable of.
Right.
Because she doesn't have any of these humanizing elements.
Not yet.
Not yet.
And also, I mean, like we saw in previous episodes, you can't undo your past, right?
Yes.
And we learned that as much as Carrie, we see with Carrie and Gordon, you know, as much as she says, can we ever have this back? And he says, no, we can have something different. We can have something potentially better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all know, especially after that crazy eyes he gave Sheriff Hood after finding out Deva. Ooh, I thought he was going to pull the trigger.
I was really nervous.
So, you know, we have seen it play out with Carrie, and I think you're absolutely right with the parallel, is that it's up to anyone to guess what's going to happen with Rebecca, but there are kind of some clear pathways that have been mm-hmm. cut for her by the other characters.
And I think it would be very poetic. I don't know that this would ever come to pass, or even if it would be the right thing for the show. But I think it would be very poetic to see Rebecca's journey over the course of this series mirror Carrie's journey from the beginning of the series, before the series.
Right.
You know, mirror Anna's journey when she became Karen.
And the things that she had to,
right.
to go through.
And the things that she had to do to escape that life. I hope that she doesn't get sucked into the life, but rather someday can escape it. She's got a long, dark journey before that ever happens, though. But before we move on, quick note about iTunes. Don't skip ahead. Here's the thing, folks. We here at AfterBuzz TV say it every week. We put out over 70 hours of quality content every week. We do it all for free. It is all available to you, available on any of your devices, streaming, downloading, whatever you want to do. We live in the future. It's amazing. You've heard this all before. Why am I saying it again? Because the situation hasn't changed, people. We live and die by your support. It's the only way that iTunes tracks our ratings. It's the only way that our bosses know that not only are we doing a great job, but that the audience is into it. The audience is responding. You know, we've gotten some great feedback from people who work on the show, and we're so very blessed that they love what we're doing and that they agree with us. But it is your support, your ratings, your reviews on iTunes that really make us happy and also just make our jobs easier. It's the best way for us to be able to get the sponsorships that are going to keep our doors open. This is, you know, podcasting, it's a new era. It's a new enterprise. And the fact is, we need sponsors. We need support. We need to be able to show people that we're delivering a quality product.
And that you as an audience love it.
So that we can keep our doors open for many years to come. Support the cause. It only takes a second. iTunes rate and review. Okay. So we talked about, let's talk about Alex Longshadow just a little bit more before we go back into Carrie.
Okay.
We've also got all kinds of Sheriff Hood stuff to talk about. So Alex has this great scene with George, mm-hmm. Who had been, challenging him for the chiefship. And Alex has basically, he feels like he's won. You know, he's sitting.
He's a little smug.
Yeah, he's lying back with his glass of, dare I say, fire water. And one of my favorite lines actually comes from Kai in this episode. Like,
he picked a hell of a time to grow some balls.
Yeah.
That couldn't be more accurate, mm-hmm. I feel like.
And you could just see his swinging dick as he's just like on this couch. And it wasn't out, Stephen, our engineer. He's giving me crazy eyes. It wasn't out. But it was the metaphorical swinging dick, mm-hmm. of a man who feels that he's won. He's going to turn on Kai, get rid of two problems all at once. And George, you know, kind of makes this vague threat. He takes out this knife that had been passed down for generations through his family to the firstborn son of every generation.
I really didn't see it as a threat.
Really?
I thought, oh, he's going to give it to him. He's going to.
The whole time you
the
thought
The whole
that.
Time I thought. This is, he's kind of begrudging. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to, but he's lost. And like he said, maybe I underestimated you.
Yeah.
And you underestimated me. And I thought, oh, this is like a peace offering.
Yeah.
And it kind of was.
It actually turned out to really be one, but Alex's utter lack of respect is what turned it into more of an ugly gesture.
Right.
Of
and
like,
that's what I thought too. I thought, God, you could show a little respect to your elders at the very least.
Just a little humility.
A little bit.
You've won.
Like Kai,
we get it.
You know what I have to say is that Kai is really good at that.
Humility.
Right? Humility.
Yeah.
He knows when to put his pride and ego aside and say, listen, you know, let's come to an agreement. And I think that really could have been used in this situation.
No, Alex would benefit for 20 more years experience. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But he doesn't have it. And instead, after this like wonderful monologue, you know, Alex basically shuts his eyes and is like,
I'm going to take a nap.
Yeah, you're so too boring. Much of a puss to stab me. And for a second, I thought that George was going to stab himself.
Oh.
Or like cut open his own throat or something. I don't know. But instead, he throws it an inch from Alex's head and now he's got this
now
knife.
He's got the generational knife.
He's got this nice generational knife to give to his firstborn son, potentially with Rebecca Bowman, maybe. We don't know. All we know is that next week is going to be a bloodbath. And I can't imagine that it's only going to be a bloodbath in New York.
Right.
Because we know that this Kai Proctor warrant isn't going to hold. This arrest isn't going to hold. He's going to be back on the street.
Everything seems to becoming unglued.
Yes.
The mm-hmm. house of cards that Sheriff Hood has built.
Aggressively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Carrie comes home. We get this nice family moment. Max has a new skateboard. He already had a skateboard. Why is he getting a new skateboard?
Because he was in the hospital.
All right. I guess sometimes
he had to do all this new medicine.
Right. And Deva is she's very savvy. She can sense the energy in the room. She knows that mommy and daddy need to talk.
She's very savvy. She got her hair cut.
Mm-hmm. And dyed again.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's blonde. And she is so Carrie and Gordon, they kind of reconnect, like watching this and like loving this moment, you know, wishing that we could have these kinds of moments again. And so they start their reconciliation. And
I love that. They start the reconciliation process.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean,
unlike Nelson Mandela's reconciliation process, this was more like, let's go to the bedroom and bury the hatchet.
Well, okay, but before that, you know, she really opens up to him for the first time and opens up to us, yes, about what it was like having a crime lord for a father.
And I liked that we got the answer because Dava asked her that question a few episodes back and we never heard the answer.
Right.
So to finally get the answer, to me, felt good to get a little bit of completion there.
And why, what I like even more about that, even though, you know, Sheriff Hood isn't a crime lord, having a criminal for a father and what that's going to do to Dava, now that Gordon has this information and can potentially disseminate it next week, I'm very, very curious about.
Ooh, predictions.
Exactly. So yeah, he doesn't need to hear anymore. He just, you know, like, less talk, more rock. And they get back into bed and it's great.
Which I was very happy for them.
I was happy too.
They just seem, as much as I was rooting for Sheriff Hood and Carrie to get back together at one point, that seems so done.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm really rooting for this family.
I want it to work out. Like, there's so many flaws, but there is love there.
There's so much love, and we know how difficult life is. We know how difficult living in this town is.
Yeah.
They have something good.
Yeah, and the sex that they're having is very passionate. Mm-hmm. It's very different from the sex we saw them having last year. I mean, who can forget the time, you know, Carrie comes out of the bathroom just naked and is just like, I want you to fuck me.
Yeah.
You know, when she's thinking about Sheriff Hood.
Right.
This very, very different. Passionate and aggressive in an entirely different way. And of course, it couldn't last. You know, like, that's the thing.
Nothing good lasts in Banshee, I'm afraid.
No, nothing good lasts. And Sheriff Hood comes to the door, which is the last person... The last person we need in this situation. They just got back together.
And I feel bad for Gordon because, you know, he's now thinking, like, really? You show up at the worst time every time.
Every time.
So it's getting to be weird. Yeah. He already has his antennas up about Sheriff Hood and where he came from, what he's doing. But now my wife?
Right. And now you want her to come with you and I don't get any answers and she's fine with it. Hell no. Gun out. Like, I'm sick of this treatment. I will blow you away. Give me one good reason why not. And it just builds and builds until Carrie lets the bomb drop. He's Dave's father. And it's all everything that he suspected, but worse.
But worse.
Because it's not just that she was sleeping with him last season or that they have some kind of connection or electricity. This is the first love of her life. They have a history together. He obviously came here to find her.
Right.
You know, and...
And now he's going to be left while they go off on a goose chase to think about this. I can't imagine... I hope he's not back at the strip club.
Well, he's not at the strip club. He's, you know, got the pot in the room and he's staring at the photo that Brock found under the bed. And who knows what's going on in his brain. But here's the thing. He now knows that he has a real competitor. Like, just having an aggressive, you know, sexually available man in town is one thing. Having the father of her first child in town, who obviously came here for her, is a huge deal. And also, it throws the whole Sheriff Hood alias into question, because how many sheriffs was she knowing when she was young?
True.
Yeah.
And that she has a crime father and all of that stuff.
And wasn't Lucas Hood supposed to be coming from, like, Oregon or Washington somewhere?
But this also puts a cramp in the investigation because this is going to hurt Dava. Dava is his daughter, but Dava is Sheriff Hood's daughter.
Right.
And if he brings him to justice, I mean, that's only going to hurt Dava.
Right.
And his wife. I mean, there's just a shitstorm coming.
Absolutely. And it's a hugely complicated situation for Gordon. You know, ultimately, I'd like to think he's not going to do what his man instinct is telling him. And instead, he's going to try to do what's best for his family. But honestly, I can't tell you what that is right now.
Right.
Because this guy is a very dangerous influence. Getting him away from the family would be better from the family unit, but putting him away could be potentially extremely damaging to Dava, just like you said. So it's a very murky situation.
And
Dave
is a teenager. I mean, if she found out,
right,
and then she found out what her father did, having that information, I mean, Like you said, what do you do?
Right. Especially armed with the information that Brock gives him in this episode, continuing this plot line where, you know, he basically makes it clear that, you know, Sheriff Hood wanted this thing to get tied to Proctor. He couldn't do it. The next day it blows up. You know, it connects him in a pretty big way. And he has a legal obligation to try to prosecute him.
Right.
So very, very curious to see what happens on that front. So much tension. I can't believe we only have one more episode left this season. And then we have to wait 42 weeks?
No, not acceptable.
Not acceptable. I can't handle it.
We might have to have like a banshee party where we watch it again.
We will. Oh, we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to do it because I don't know if I can handle 42 weeks to get just 10. 10 a year is too few.
Agreed.
But I do like how tight it makes the storytelling. So it works out. Okay. Let's talk about the sheriff. Let's talk about Emmett. You know, Emmett's departure still rocking the sheriff's world a little bit.
And he's not really gone, and I'm kind of hoping he doesn't go.
Me too.
First of all, his wife just lost her baby, her fetus.
Yeah.
And she was in the hospital, and now he's saying he wants to go to Florida and see how that feels. Is he taking her with him?
I assume.
I hope so.
Yeah, he's not. No, he is a Christian man. He wouldn't abandon his family. He wouldn't abandon his wife.
That's what I was thinking, but yeah. I also thought it seems odd that he just wants to leave.
Look, I think he's afraid. He's afraid of himself. He's afraid of what he's capable of.
Sure.
And, you know, going as far away as he conceivably can. You know, Florida is pretty far from Banshee, and it's by a coast. You know, it's out by the water. Maybe just a change of scenery, an extreme change of scenery, might protect him. It's this denial.
Protect him from himself.
Right. It's the denial phase of realizing what you really are and what you're really capable of. He's doing whatever he can to make it impossible that he could cross the line again, but he knows in his heart of hearts that that is impossible.
Right. You can't unbe who you are.
Right. You can't undo yourself.
Right.
This happened, and it was a conscious decision.
What Sheriff Hood says in bed with Siobhan.
Right.
So brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with that. It was a conscious decision, and that's what's twisting Emmett up inside. It's why he keeps walking by the caddy. It's like, how am I don't want to leave this life, but how can I possibly represent the law when I have such utter disregard for it? And I loved his scene with Sheriff Hood I think it spoke volumes when he's like, you know, you have utter disregard for all this stuff, and you know, you think you're fooling everyone, but you can't fool me. And
you see the look on his
face. The blank look that the sheriff gives anyone who like almost who says that they know what's up, like the one that he gave Jason earlier in the season. It's like, how's that? And he's like, you're a good man. And that throws the sheriff for a loop. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure like the first thought was like, okay,
no, I'm not.
Yeah, no, Emmett, you don't know what you're talking about. But then it sits with him and it stinks and it hurts. It's gotta hurt. I loved the I think it was Carrie's monologue.
Sometimes when you live a lie long enough, it feels like the truth.
Right. And he's like, you know, he's going up to the front desk with this Proctor arrest report, and he's cracking jokes.
He can't fill out the paperwork. He doesn't even know how to do it.
But like, that's an accepted part of his relationship. I forget her name, who's at the front desk. It's an accepted part of his relationship with her. He's getting comfortable, which is the last thing when you're a thief.
And an imposter.
And an imposter to get comfortable where you are and to be comfortable, you know, protecting the law and protecting these people is incredibly dangerous for him, potentially more than I think he's realizing.
It's so interesting because this episode in particular, it's entitled Homecoming. And yeah. I felt the whole time it should be called Truth Telling because every single character had a moment of total clarity that they say something utterly true, where the rest of the season we've seen, you know, we only get glimpses of the truth. We get half truths. We get shades and shadows.
Yes.
So to have all of these monologues and statements from almost every single character that's just straightforward, straight to the point, this is how it is. And to have Siobhan tell Sheriff Hood, I don't know you.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to figure this out and it doesn't make sense. It's like one by one, the cards are falling.
Mm-hmm.
And he better get out of town because it's gonna
hit
the fan.
I was so mad at him because I'm just like, look, if you're going to perpetuate this relationship with this woman who doesn't owe you anything, okay, But she obviously cares about you. She obviously likes you. You're inviting her into your bed. She's staying the night. You're having these casual. I love the two of them in bed, laying in opposite directions, each having a beer, lounging around in their underwear. Cause that's what, that couple would do.
Right.
You know, he and Anna, their like passion was way too intense, I think, to have that kind of a moment.
Agreed.
And I love the how different and how adult, how mature this relationship feels. But then the moment that, you know, he gets pulled back into thief land, when he's no longer purely Sheriff Hood, he shuts her out entirely. Mm-hmm. Instead of giving her enough to not ask the rest of the questions. And that's what drives me nuts. And I know he's protecting her as much as he's protecting himself, but come on!
Well, it's hard because he already leaves all these casualties in his wake everywhere he goes. And this one seems avoidable. And that's what makes me angry. Mm. You know, where it's like, you're carrying on this relationship and you're going to hurt this woman and you don't have to.
Yeah.
And everything else he poisons seems inevitable but this. And yet he's doing it anyways.
Yeah. And that's what's driving me crazy because she doesn't deserve it.
Mm-mm.
And at the same time, I feel like she is one of the only people in town who would really understand if he told her everything.
I think she understands him without knowing anything about him. Yeah. I think she's the only person that really understand
him. On a pure human animal nature level.
Yeah.
She understands, but just wants the facts to be able to back it up and to know that he's not completely BS. You know, she deserves that much. But, you know, he gets this call from Job, which he almost didn't even get.
I know.
Because he was too busy with the hanky-panky, and she makes the point, you know,
you're like, the only sheriff that doesn't answer the phone.
Exactly. Which he's like, oh shit, you know, and answers the phone. That's not his exact reaction, but you know, going back to maintaining the cover, and then it's just out the door. It's not like a friend is in trouble or
that's what I don't understand.
Or, you know, that gangster who came to town last year, he surfaced. I have to go investigate. You can't come with me because you can't go with me. It's out of our jurisdiction.
That's all she would need.
Yeah.
But he shuts her down.
Yeah. Shuts her out entirely. Now, granted, if he had told her, she exactly would be the sort of person to be like, no, I'm coming. Screw you. But, you know, then I don't want to say he could have knocked her out.
I was going to say horrible,
he probably would have just hit her, which we don't want.
No.
But, yeah. So he and Anna head off to New York. Hold on, before we go to New York, is there anything else that we need to talk about in town?
Ooh.
Kai. We need to talk about Kai.
And his visitors.
Yes. So Kai's in prison. Sugar visits him in prison.
Now, did we know how deep this went, that he did time for work he was doing for Kai and that Kai came to visit him?
If we knew that was the reason that he was
in prison,
it would have come up at the very beginning of the series. I don't know that we knew that specifically.
I felt surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked, but I was like, oh.
Right.
My assumption from the way Sugar spoke about being a con was that this was a lifestyle. This was something that happened before Banshee.
Right.
I did not really pick up that, like, oh, you were working for Kai like everybody else.
Yeah.
He did time for him.
Yeah. He's been there Kai's whole life. He's known him his whole life. He considers him on some level a sick version of family, you know? And he's trying not to backpedal for what he did, but he's trying to basically make sure, no matter how the cards fall, that he'll be okay.
And I didn't like that at all.
It seems a little
two-faced, because he's been on Sheriff Hood's side and looking Kai straight in the face and saying, you know, don't mess with him, don't mess with us.
Look, he still is on Sheriff Hood's side. The kind of life that he's led, and at his age, he's too old to, you know, be living in fear.
True.
And he just wants to let Kai know, because he's known Kai way longer.
He's pragmatic about it.
It's like, look, business is business. Friendship is friendship. Family is family. Hood doesn't consult me on what he does. If he did, yeah, I probably wouldn't have told you. I have an alliance with him. But I just want you to let you know, it's nothing personal.
And Kai seems to think it is personal.
Yeah. Well, no shit. You know, basically his rage for Sheriff Hood, I think, is the first chink in his armor, because Kai is the king of pragmatism.
Well, I was going to say, but Kai seems, that's the thing, is that when Kai takes something personally,
right,
it goes haywire. Yeah.
Blood will be spilt.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Kai is the most pragmatic character on the show, and to have him completely lose that pragmatism is an incredibly dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm. And it shows us how deep this, you know, rage goes and how far he'll go when someone is really – he's ultimately more threatened than he's ever been. And he's more vulnerable than he's ever been.
And it's, one again, a great parallel that I love, Kai versus Rabbit. Kai is pragmatism first, emotion second. Mm-hmm. Rabbit is emotion all the time and then – regret some of the decisions you made along the way, talking about, you know, the assassin that failed to kill Carrie and Hood in episode 5, and, you know, how everything went down at the end of last season, the fact that they're going to be coming after him before he's got his health back.
Not just that, but he goes, I looked for my daughter for 15 years and now she hunts me. And
He's so operatic.
He's so operatic and poetic, but also I was just thinking, but you were looking for her to kill her.
Right.
Like, the way he romanticized the idea was like, I've been looking for her for 15 years. Now she's hunting me. How dare she? I'm like, but you were hunting her the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but that doesn't seem to be...
No, it doesn't seem to be...
Seem to work for him.
No, no, not at all.
All of that is lost. Mm-hmm. I think he just wants to win.
Yeah. Well, Kai, he has this visit from Sugar, and then even more dramatically...
His mother.
He gets a visit from his mother, who we met earlier this season, and... just incredibly moving scene as she apologizes
and she really drops truth bombs. Mm-hmm. I felt like, because he's been asking for acknowledgement of what happened forever. And she's just like, I learned about my son is alone. And he's just like, Mom, I've been alone my entire adult life. What's different now?
Yeah. What's different is he's in prison and she's had enough time to think and she's finally accepting the blame for her part in his transformation into this monster.
Which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah.
Especially that Kai was accepting of it and receiving of it. Mm-hmm. Because I think as an audience, we can agree.
Yeah.
That if he wasn't treated this way by his family and his community, he never would have turned into the person he is.
Well, it goes back to love and pragmatism. Mm-hmm. Because he's someone who so desperately craves commitment, but was so utterly failed by family and by love that he became a ruthless pragmatist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why Rebecca's so important to him. That's why her sleeping with Jason was a betrayal, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's not family. I mean, not that she should be banging family, but...
He might prefer it.
He might
prefer... Who knows?
Who knows? Because we leave that kind of icky and open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, he will not be betrayed by family ever again versus Rabbit, who, you know, loved so intensely and sees violence as a form of love.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from the same place. The two are so utterly mixed together that they're the same thing. And I love this scene and to see him react and just what a wonderful performance.
Fantastic performance.
He's so utterly heartbroken. And I was... on the edge of my seat waiting to hear what he had to say when she was like, can I come and see you again?
I know, and he takes a couple beats to answer, and I thought, oh God, please say yes.
Just a little, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his mom says, you know, your father demands contrition from everyone but himself.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear her just be able to articulate all of the hypocrisy in their family, in a life, it's like, that's all that Kai's really ever wanted. I don't know that it makes him feel any better,
because
he's known that to be the truth for a long time.
And that's also, that line totally describes Rabbit, too.
Mm-hmm.
He demands contrition from everyone except himself. He's so utterly arrogant.
Yep.
Arrogant
and myopic.
Yeah. And it kind of, in a way, and I may be completely off base here, and you tell me, it kind of reframes a lot of what I think this series is about. And it's about criminals, it's about gangsters, it's about people and our dark side, but it's also, I think it's an examination of what drives bad people, good people and bad people to do very terrible things.
I don't think you're off base at all. I think that's exactly what it is. And as we get further towards the finale, I feel like we're taking a couple clicks, like click, 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 just mm-hmm. like the safe in the beginning, where our perspective has changed just enough that we're getting all of this insight about our characters and storylines. You can't help but think that.
Mm-hmm. I love...
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Loved everything. Okay. We don't have a ton of time, so we got to jump to New York. And a great sequence. They get to Job just in time. This shootout with these two guys dressed as priests.
The hospital shootout scene was amazing. I loved, because you have that round robin mm-hmm. effect, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, but I was thinking, how come no one in the, I know they have silencers.
Yeah.
I find silencers to be sexy. I don't know why.
It's because.
Well, it adds length.
It's because they're longer and because it's.
Steven, our engineer, is giving me a face.
It's quiet and yeah.
Anyways, it makes the
There's
gun
something
look
more like, intimate about a silent shot.
Well, there sure is. Mm-hmm. And so at first I thought, why is no one noticing what's going on? There are huge guys in old world robes.
Right.
And not one person turns their head. And nope. They're going into every single room and I'm thinking, is that realistic? Well, it actually might be.
Hey, they're priests that go around and
open
bless
every single room.
Bless the sick. Maybe they're a little overzealous. Maybe they lost a priest and they're in a hurry.
Yeah, that they've lost their
Come on, man, we got mass in 5 minutes. That, you know, we're gonna be late. Yes. Not exactly. No. But just another classic Banshee action sequence leading to our police friend coming in and realizing or seeing just a glimpse of Sheriff Hood before they're gone.
Vanish.
And now we're set up for the ultimate climactic finish.
Now, did you see the preview for next week? Because I didn't.
I did not, okay. No. So we know nothing. But let's predict anyway.
All right.
And now, you're after Buzz.
All right, Oriana.
So, I don't think I can predict anything that we don't already know. I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that we see some resolution with Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't die, or if there isn't some major, you know, shootout, I just want Rabbit to die.
Well, here's the thing, right? One little tidbit that Anna drops. Mm-hmm. We get the name of the priest, her uncle. Did you write it down?
No.
Okay, I don't know it, but. She says he's the one person that Rabbit ever seemed afraid of.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking if Rabbit does go down for the count, it sets up the priest, his brother, for a brutal revenge
later
on in the series. We also don't know what his role is in their sort of crime family.
And I see that as a huge possibility because I feel like the brother's character is supremely underdeveloped. He just appeared in the beginning and now at the end, and now I want to know more.
Right.
So... I mean, I think that's
a great
prediction.
What if Anna dies?
I really hope that doesn't happen. But as she said, we kill him or we die trying, and someone's going to die.
Someone's
going to
die.
There's going to be collateral damage for sure.
Yeah, we're going to get... I'm thinking if it's a Banshee Red Wedding, as Greg Yatanis put it. I think it was Greg. Anyway, there's got to be at least two deaths. And I'm going to peg it's either Job or Anna down for the count in New York.
I was going to guess Job.
I
know. I don't want anyone to die.
I know.
Anna, I think, is too... I don't know. I think she's too important.
And I think it's... And maybe Alex Longshadow, but that's not affecting... Who would... If I was a showrunner...
If
I was a showrunner, who would I kill off for optimum effect?
Well, Rebecca would be a real impact.
I know, but her...
But I don't... Her story's too good.
Her story's not over.
I know.
You know, like, that's the thing. Is like, Anna's been trying to get her family back all mm-hmm. season, but even if she gets them back, part of me is like, her story is a little wrapped up because she and the sheriff aren't going to wind up together.
Right. She makes a good target.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just going to be balls to the wall, action, suspense, death, tears. It's going to be so
intense.
It's going
to be over, guys.
I know, but I can't wait to see it. Oriana, where can the people find you?
Well, people, I'm very excited to announce that by Wednesday, March 12th, this Wednesday, I will have launched my show, Running Errands in Hollywood.
Oh, great.
And also my website, where you'll be able to find all that goodness, will be live on Wednesday, and that will be orianaleo.com. So please find me there and the usual spots on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo and Instagram at Oriana Leo.
Okay, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV, all over the place. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Cougar Town, Justified, Helix, and Lost Girl on Sci-Fi. I got Resurrection on ABC, which just started this Sunday. And a bunch of stuff coming up in the spring. Lots of great announcements. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with the finale. Thank you very much. Good night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Banshees rule.
Oh, Banshees rule. Damn it, I forgot.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.